This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the evening, this hour will be we're talking about recent plans to include cuts in the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus and why it's received such a strong backlash. This has been an ongoing conversation at BFM the whole day in the morning, and also earlier we talked about in the afternoon we spoke with Edin Koo to talk about the value of learning another language, essentially. So Aiman, tell us a bit more, I guess, about what this new component will involve.
Well, the cut component is about 6 pages out of the whole textbook. It's a small portion of it, and it's also not part of the exams. So during this component, students will learn how to write proverbs, Malay proverbs in cut, by following dotted lines and following the shapes. And they also learn how to pronounce the alphabets. But some of the backlash that it has received suggests that there is some kind of racial anxiety. For example, a group of DAP grassroots office bearers and assembly persons said that institutionalizing Jawi will tear apart Malaysia's social fabric.
So DAP political education director Liu Chin Tong said that this anxiety is because of a lack of confidence in one's own identity and seeing the other as a threat. The Aduan for Perai, P. Ramasamy, said that the zero-sum game seems to take precedence in determining the political discourse.
We are in a very... When it comes to the Education Ministry and the Education Minister, we have been, ever since the last general election, zero-sum, it seems, about this. I think that actually we are going to look back on the Muzli Malik effect as a cultural phenomena. We were talking earlier, trying to remember who was the previous Minister of Education back in the previous regime, and we struggled to remember.
I think it was the last minister would have been Idris Jusuf,
and it wasn't really a prominent topic of conversation. It's like, oh, did you hear what the Ministry of Education did this time? But the Ministry, of course, is certainly the largest employer of any of the ministries. It has the largest budget. It has easily the largest education budget in Southeast Asia. And I think that people on all sides of the political spectrum are putting all their hopes and fears on the character, on the person of Muzli Malik.
Right.
He also receives a lot of backlash for basically anything he says, really.
Anything.
And I know, in a way, it's brought upon him by himself, because he started with the black shoes, white shoes thing, and people expected more, I guess, from the education minister. And so when they want to introduce something like a khat in Bahasa Malaysia, it is like fodder for criticism, really.
But let's jump back to the black shoes, white shoes thing.
Okay.
That debacle, which is always mentioned. On that occasion, he was giving a conversation, and he said...
An hours-long conversation, if I'm not wrong.
Right.
Several hours.
Right. With members of the public. And he said many things. That happened to be one of the many things he said. And people then jumped on that. And I kind of suspect that there's a bullying, but also because, as a famous philosopher once said, I believe that children are the future. And there's this sense that everything that we wish for this country is going to involve the education of our children. That everything that has happened that may be bad, and again, across the political spectrum, was because of the education system. And moving forward, people are so desperate that it be the way that we personally want it to be. And so jumping on him, and I kind of feel bullying. I personally am not activated or triggered by this recent cut Jawi story.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of feeling, my righteous indignation should be up there. But it's like, I just can't muster anything for it, personally.
Well, you know, I think that there is several elements to this, right? It's the perception and the perceived build-up of little changes that he's been recommending, that what appears to seem like what he's been recommending to changes to the education system, when there are calls for one that is more practical, one that gets our students more and more ready by, you know, the big words like, oh, the IR 4.0 and all that. It might just be coming off at a time when things are more sensitive, right? We want students to be prepared for the future. We want them to learn skills like financial literacy. We want them to pick up skills that, you know, involve voter education, political literacy. There's just a lot of things that we do want our kids to be able to learn. And I guess when it does come off like, well, this is just one additional thing, and many people are also getting it wrong in thinking that this is an additional subject that's being introduced as opposed to it just being an additional, say, 6 pages in the textbook that's, you know, not even tested, right? So I think maybe just the optics of it might not be at its best.
I also think it's because people really care about our education sector. Everyone wants to get it right. I mean, this is the future of our country at stake. If we don't get it right, then, you know, we'll go down the drain in the future. So particularly about education policies and education initiatives is what really gets a lot of opinions or thoughts from people. So we've got like this HUT in Bahasa Malaysia syllabus, or we've got things like, do we teach science and maths in Malay or English, or the whole idea of vernacular school. So it's all very something that can become polarizing just because everyone has a strong opinion about it.
Iman, you're the only person in this room, I think, who can actually read and write in Jawi.
Yes.
And you also went to a religious school.
Yes.
And, I mean, do you think that the learning of Jawi has helped or hindered you in your later education?
Well, it hasn't hindered at all because, I mean, for me personally, learning Jawi comes hand in hand with reading and understanding the Quran as well. So it helps in terms of understanding the Quran and reading it. But in terms of hindering, it hasn't hindered anything really. And I mean, the argument for learning Jawi is, one is for Muslims. They want to familiarize with themselves with the characters. And it's also useful for academicians, not just Malaysian academicians, but also foreign academicians who maybe want to research history in this region or in the Arab world and need to read really old documents. So knowing about these characters and understanding it and being able to read it is very helpful in that sense.
In fact, I was talking to a historian recently and she was saying how Jawi, Tamil newspapers written in Jawi from the 19th century and the early 20th century, it was a common thing.
Keep your thoughts coming. We are at 7733 2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be continuing this conversation after this with Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. Keep it here on Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:16. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin, Iman and Cam. We are talking about the introduction of CART as an addition to the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus. And we're now going to cross over to Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. James, thanks so much for speaking to us today.
Good evening.
Where do you see this strong reaction towards the inclusion of CART in the syllabus coming from?
Well, I think there are two basic reasons. The first one is that you have to remember one of the reasons why Barisan Nasional, or UMNO in particular, lost last year's general election was the perceived Islamization of Malaysia. So for the Chinese community and the non-Muslim community generally, they see the introduction of CART basically as a way to Islamize the education system. So that's one fear. The second reason why it's becoming such a hot issue is because the DAP, who holds the deputy education minister's post, were not aware that it was coming in. So it was a huge surprise for the Chinese community. They put the DAP there thinking that the DAP will stop all this sort of Islamization, and they expected if this thing would happen, they would be consulted beforehand. So I think one is for historical, political reasons, they're afraid of this thing. And secondly, they think that the DAP should warn them. The fact that the DAP didn't warn them suggests that maybe the DAP really did know that it was coming. And this will be very bad for DAP because it means that they have no real power in the ministry.
Is it just the wrong time to introduce Ahad in the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus? Because on one hand, ICERT and the Rome Statute are still fresh in memory, while on the other hand, we've been talking about preparing for IRA 4.0, and does the introduction of Ahad doesn't necessarily seem to reconcile with all that?
Well, my personal position is that this is the wrong time to introduce this sort of thing, because I'm sure everybody in Malaysia agrees with me that the Malaysian public education system is sort of in a mess. I think what we need is a complete transformation of the education system and really prepare our students for the 21st century. And I think for a lot of parents, especially for young children in primary school now, you know that there's something wrong with the education system, and suddenly the education ministry is trying to introduce something which a lot of parents think that there's no economic value out of it. So rather than introducing things such as calligraphy, they're thinking, why don't they really introduce something that's really useful? For example, additional classes in mathematics or even computer programming, things that have more economic value. But I think the whole thing actually comes down to a question of trust for political reasons in the past, and also the fact that people think that the education system needs to be reformed to prepare students for jobs in the 21st century, rather than learning something like this, which they feel that has no market value.
Do you think then this is an issue of messaging, a wrong style of messaging from Pakatan Harapan?
No, I don't think it's an issue of messaging. I mean, the thing was, this is going to be very hard to sell. You know, if you have a child in a government school system, you try very hard to make sure that your child gets a good education. There's already so much mess over issues like teaching the English in mathematics, and every few years the system keeps changing. So you want stability, and you want your children to get a real education. And suddenly, when you wake up in the morning, you get the news that instead of getting a real education, they've been asked to study calligraphy, which is another thing on top of education system, which is widely seen to be a mess. So this thing was never really going to sell, no matter how you present it to the public.
And I guess, as we've already noted before this, it seems as if Dr. Mazli Malik is receiving especially much more attention compared to most other ministers and also his predecessors. Do you think there's any particular reason for that?
I actually think the reports that he's getting more attention is not true. The education minister in the Malaysian system has always been a highly controversial post. Because I think for a young country like Malaysia, people always understand that education is really the root for social mobility. If you get a good education, you have a chance to move to a higher class. Because of the broken education system, and this has been going on for many, many years under the Barisan National Government, this is always going to be controversial. So it's not a question of whether Mazli is controversial. It's the fact that the ministry itself, the whole thing is controversial, and it comes back to the point that I keep making, which is that our education system is really broken across the board.
Mm-hmm. The DAP Senator Liu Chin Tong brought up the issue of cultural confidence and mutual trust. Do you see our nation lacking in terms of that trust at the moment?
Yes. I think for a very long time, the Chinese community and Indian community see all this introduction, anything related to Islam or Arab studies, they see this as creeping Islamization. So the trust has basically been broken from the 1990 onwards. So there is an issue of trust. But again, I do not want to make this a religious or racial issue. The bottom line is that for the individual parents, the bottom line is that they want their children to learn something useful, something real in a school system. Mm-hmm. And if we speak to most parents in Malaysia nowadays, they think learning calligraphy, whether it's Chinese calligraphy or Islamic calligraphy or cut or whatever it is, Jawi, most people think that, you know, this is not the sort of stuff that my child should be learning. And even if he should be learning, it should be not done at the formal class periods. It should come under things like art and that sort of thing. It should not really add on to the existing syllabus.
Well, you say most parents, and I would question that. I would wonder if, on a political level, there are people who would be equally happy, perhaps, this and other things like it would be being introduced, and it would be a demographic that would be worth attracting in future, is it not? Politically.
Yes, for the scholar kebangsaan, like yes. I was talking about the government Chinese schools and the government Indian schools. So you can see that all the major Chinese and Indian education groups have come out very strongly against this. That is the group I'm talking about. Of course, among the Islamic groups in Malaysia, they see this as a continuation of the Islamization of Malaysia. For them, it's really not a problem. What I'm talking about is the Chinese parents and Indian parents who send them to the government Chinese and Indian schools.
Prof, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Professor James Chin, Director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania, talking to us about this whole issue surrounding the introduction of CARTS in the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus, and also why it has received so much attention. So we have been receiving messages on this as well. First up, this message from Kalai that reads, is the absence of CART the most pressing issue with our education today? How is it going to lift us from the doldrums of where our education is?
And that was one of the concerns that Professor James Chin was bringing up just now, that parents don't see this as a useful skill to have. It doesn't have market value. From the point of view of the government, the reason why they wanted to introduce CART in Bahasa Malaysia was it's part of the language art component of learning language. So language is beautiful. It's got art to it. So it's part of appreciating the beauty of language, and that's why they introduced it in the syllabus.
I think that there is, as the professor and we have noted, a special scrutiny on the education ministry. I tried to go back to find how the CART issue was first introduced, to see how the message was put out. I was unable to find the moment when it was first mentioned. It's not as if, as I could understand it, that there was a press circular sent out from the ministry, important notice, CART is going to be introduced into the syllabus. I don't think it was that big a priority in the ministry's mind, as far as I can see, but it's become yet another rod to break on the back.
So we have other messages here. One from Toby that asks, saying that why teach CART and not Jawi? Section 9 of Akta Bahasa Kebangsaan says the writing for the national language is Rumi, and Section 10 says numerical is Arabic numbers. Why not teach in history or as the history of Bahasa Melayu, as the federal constitution calls it Bahasa Melayu and not Bahasa Malaysia? And finally, if it's taught as part of the history of Bahasa Melayu evolution, what were the writing styles prior to it that contributed to the linguistic evolution? I believe some form of Sanskrit was once used by the Malays.
That's true. There was some form of Sanskrit that was used to represent Malay words. I myself am curious why they included in the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus, because obviously, we are a multicultural society.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have thought they would have predicted that, you know, other races would want similar things for their language as well. So, there was a comment by the, I believe it's the MCA president, who said that if it's about appreciating the art of language, it can perhaps be included in the arts subject. Then you can have calligraphy in Jawi and in other languages as well. And I do agree with that idea. I mean, I'm still perplexed as to why it's being integrated into the Bahasa Malaysia subject.
Yeah, gosh, do I find myself in agreement with MCA? Yeah, I think I do.
Well, if the plan is to eventually introduce other kinds of calligraphy into the education system, I guess just as a different way to appreciate language and a different way to appreciate art, it really does make sense to include it as part of Pendidikan Seni. Though at this point in time, if it is only CART, there is some sort of value in doing it like this, right? Because it is just a temporary a break for students while they're learning about Tata Bahasa, while they're learning Pemahaman and how to write essays and karangans and all that. That, you know, it's just a nice break to learn in learning Bahasa Malaysia, Bahasa Melayu, because they're really, if you know, you need different ways to engage with the language. And if this is one that is a bit more visual, one that is just a bit more creative, there might be some benefits to that. I'm not sure. This is just where I'm feeling it.
Well, interesting notions. And I think it's also interesting to note that Jawi is moving in the direction, I know it's an Arabic script, but it's moving in the direction of being a sort of almost a dead script. Because it's become redundant. I was trying to work out, find out, again, I'm failing you people in my research. I couldn't find when the Jawi newspapers were being closed down, but I think at some point in the 90s, I remember in the early 90s, there were Jawi newspapers. At the end of the 90s, there were no Jawi newspapers. And so when do you use Jawi now?
Well, I mean, it's being used in Kelantan for like road signs and whatnot, so that part of it is still being used, and just in general religious education. I mean, but in daily life, I don't think people use it in general. But it's part of the Malay culture. So there's a feeling that if you don't continue to practice it, you might lose it because you forget it. And it reminds me of how Welsh people don't speak Welsh anymore, and they find that to be a shame. So I guess it's similar to here as well. How Malays want to keep it alive.
Keep your thoughts coming. 7733 2900 is the number to call. WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
6:36, you're listening to the Evening Edition with me, Kelvin. Also in the studios with me is Ayman and Cam. So we have been talking about the introduction of cut in the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus, and I guess trying to understand the backlash surrounding it. And you can also keep your thoughts coming. 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. First up on the line, we do have Inder. Inder, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening, guys. Well, for me, it's very simple. Cut is not a religious, not a racial issue at all. The introduction of cut is always going to be very difficult because cut, there is no real selling point to the parents. It is very hard to market yourself later on. The same goes to Chinese choreography as well. You don't see a very high value for you next time in your future career if you choose this path. And then the issue with Malaysian education system is that we have a lot of basic needs that is not fixed. We cannot even agree on maths and science, whether it's going to be taught in English or in Bahasa or in Mandarin for the Sekolah Jenis Kebangsaan, I guess. Yeah, Dong Zhong is saying that, oh no, we are not going to use English for maths and science. So these are some things that are really, really basic, and parents are insecure because they don't think the government is making the right decision when it comes to these principles. So these are just my thoughts, you know. It is going to be a very difficult thing for the government to sell cut parents. Yeah.
Well, Inder, I just was curious, right? How practical would you like schools to be? Because I kind of feel like there needs to be a balance between stuff that, you know, while may not be while may not generate the most economic value, it is something of value to learn, just, you know, for the sake of knowledge, for the sake of if anything, fun.
Yeah, so if you look into the topic today, cut, we as general normal humans who don't really have in-depth knowledge of cut, although it's only 6 pages, yeah, fine. But is it art? Is it language? Where do you draw the line? Are you expecting them to take an exam? Oh, no, there is no exam then. Then what are you expecting them to do? To love it? To... I don't know. I mean, no, everybody's as confused as everybody as we speak now. So I don't know. I think in practicality, the basics of our education system is where we are weak in. So maybe fixing those basics and then adding on new things, fun things to the children will be something that we can look forward to.
Inder, thank you so much for your call. And it is a message that has been coming across even in our messages. So in terms of the way in which we prioritize our education system, so Anne says, our education minister has got his priorities wrong. We should be concentrating on the issues like the PPSMI. Of all problems surrounding this, this is introduced instead. Subra says there is an urgent need to increase the subject learning time for math and science at primary schools to prepare Malaysia to become more competitive in the global front. And another message about priority coming from Law, which reads, while we are busy talking about calligraphy, black shoes, school bags, science in BM or English, our neighbours up north is pushing for their students to learn a third language in addition to Thai and English, which is coding, possibly starting as early as kindergarten. We are already behind our neighbours and will lag further back. We are still waiting for clear, comprehensive blueprint and policy changes for the education system. Looks like the overhaul needs to start with the ministry first. The future is at stake.
And yeah, the general consensus is that the ministry has got their priorities wrong. There are so many other issues that they need to iron out first before introducing something like HAT in the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus. And yeah, it is true that there are other issues at stake, but I mean, for me, because I see this as it's only six pages in the textbook, and that's going to take maybe, I don't know, 1 or 2 days to do. So I wonder if it's just because it's just a small part, like we can also introduce HAT while also trying to fix science and maths and all the other things.
Yeah. When I was in school, I learned Latin.
Mm. Right? Okay.
That language is dead 2,000 years ago, pretty much. And I have no recollection of any of it. I can conjugate the word, the verb to farm. but by some miracle, when I was studying it, I somehow managed to achieve a sort of like relatively okay result. And it was that result that pushed me over the edge that got me into the next school.
Yeah.
So I have a certain fondness for that.
We also have a lot. Well, we also have some messages that's you know, it's expressing some of the amount of anxiety about the education system and the introduction of this as a subject. Michael says, it may be six pages and not tested for now. However, later in time, surely the syllabus will grow and will be tested. And then this also coming through from Tan, which says, it's a slippery slope. Six pages could be for now, but one day it could be 60 pages and then it becomes six chapters. And I think this is that mistrust and anxiety that Professor James Chin was talking about earlier, our guest, that, you know, we perhaps just don't have that trust in the institution sometimes.
For sure, for sure. I mean, we've been burnt, haven't we?
Yeah.
Over the last 30 years, perhaps. And we also have the memory that the education system in this country was very good, was really genuinely good. But it was on a small scale, actually. It was a handful of elite schools. And so we had very good education for a small number of people. Now we have pretty mediocre to bad education for a lot of people. And then there must be, we hope, a way to create a good education system for all.
Yeah, and that is true, right? Trying to find that balance is extremely difficult. And, you know, as Professor James Chin mentioned earlier, we are a relatively young country and we're so aware of the fact that education is one way of mobility across the economic class, right? That's how just having a degree, well, maybe that was an old notion, but just having a degree would give you the opportunity to get a high-paying job. It would give you some amount of stability. And just over time, it, you know, it feeds into your retirement savings and all that. So it is like a one-off plan that does set you on a very good financial path. And that's why perhaps we are a lot more invested in it. We do also have a caller on the line. Sabrina, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, I am a mother of four and all my children are in Australia because of choice. I went through school learning Jawi when we were in Standard 1 till Standard 6 back in the 80s, regardless of what race or religion you embrace. And in secondary school, I was in a boarding school and we were made to choose a third language. So I chose French. Well, the rest of them either chose Arabic or Japanese. In Australia, so as a mom, I understand the value of music, art, and also a third or fourth language. So in Australia, you are supposed to just stick to the three core subjects, like English, math, and science. But you are allowed to choose another three electives, which could be anything from drama, dance, to art or calligraphy, whatever. So I think it, what the government should do is just look back. In the 80s, we didn't have any issues. Like, nobody would be screaming, you know, why are you doing this? We just followed because everybody's relaxed. And as children, if you make them, if you give it as a choice, they are likely more to learn. And from a medical point of view, in a child's development, if you give them choice and see what they are inclined to, what they are interested, they will learn better. Not all about exams or any compulsion. Yeah, that's my sense.
Sabrina, thank you so much for your thoughts. And it is, you know, there is some level of truth there, where if you give kids sometimes the choice to choose, they may not necessarily go for that option. In this case, we can't. If you do make it optional, maybe they might not want to learn it. Though if you do, I think, make it more flexible, and in some other nations and the education system where they do let kids choose and pick and choose what they want to learn just simply and merely based on interest, that seems to have worked in some countries. But of course, they have vastly more resources than we do. They tend to be, you know, Scandinavian, so they are also a lot more homogenous than we are. So, and what they can provide is definitely much more, because they can afford having small classroom. They can have more teachers dedicated to a smaller number of students.
Yeah, but the nature of our primary school and secondary school is that students don't really get a chance to choose their electives. You want to do this subject or this subject. It's all very much structured and exam oriented, and so that there isn't that flexibility. And and part of the backlash against introducing Khad in Bahasa Malaysia is the idea that is being that students are obligated to learn it, that right. they have no choice to choose otherwise. And yeah, I mean, judging from some of the comments that we've been receiving, some people would prefer it to be an optional subject rather than something that's compulsory.
Keep your messages coming. We'll be heading to some messages first, and then we'll be reading yours after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:48 in the evening. You are listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam. We have been talking about the introduction of Khad into the Bahasa Malaysia syllabus. So earlier we went through some messages, a lot of anxiety and fear about introduction, which may imply a sense of mistrust towards the institution and government as a whole. And I guess we're just really trying to find out the different reasons and the different pictures as to why some might be more comfortable, why some are comfortable, and why some don't find this to be an issue. So we have this message here from Lutfi that says, I disagree that Khad or calligraphy should be placed under arts. We are developing an appreciation for the Malay language in all its forms, whether written or auditory. We already have sastra to develop appreciation for Malay poetry. This is a non-issue.
It for a lot of people it is. I wonder if it's if the split is on a racial lines. We mentioned, I think anxiety is something that's really coming through here. A lot of people are nervous, you know, oh, six pages today, six chapters tomorrow, and then it'll be a mess. But also hope as well. There's a sense now, I don't think that it would have been felt just a few short years ago, a hope that actually it can be corrected, something can be achieved. And if we just do the right thing, we don't go down these blind alleys of black shoes and cut and stuff, we can create a decent education system. So it's like the fear of losing an opportunity that we have now.
Yeah, and I guess it's also how long should we wait before a draft of a more complete education plan is better, one that is more comprehensive, that, you know, kids today can enjoy, not kids that, you know, will only enter the education system maybe 5 years in or 10 years in. Because we it does feel as if like we are on a constant race, and that's been a message that's been coming up, that we are falling behind, we are lagging, we are not learning the right things. And this, I guess, is coming through from many of the messages. We also have another one here from Prabha that says, on Jawi or Kartian education system, maybe it should not be as part of Bahasa Melayu. However, looking up to my idol, the great and late Steve Jobs, he noted that he found calligraphy had helped him create new fonts for the iPhone, and as a result, new applications and tech. So let's stop bickering on trust, but work on creating wholesome and holistic children of the future. So let's cut it on, but not in main subjects. Further, we're still awaiting Mr. Masli's analysis of our current education system.
That's right. With Apple, the first thing that he did was concentrate on fonts, and the fact that you could choose a font was the key difference between Apple and the others.
Mm-hmm. And it just shows that there is value in learning the art of language, because if we are just going to gear ourselves towards science or mathematics or whatever, we're going to lose the artistic side, which some people may relate to more. Arts may resonate stronger with some people, and that could lead to greater things in the future. So it is something that has to be encouraged as well, in addition to science and maths.
And we have some callers on the line. First up, we have Victor. Victor, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello. Louis Sullivan tell us that the form follow function. So I think the proper question to ask is, is this JavaScript still functional? If it is, why was it replaced by this Romanized pronunciation, this ABCD, I mean, years ago? So if it's not functional, why do we make our students spend time learning it? Or maybe this Mr. Masdi is going to say that, oh, it's not about function, it's about artistic beauty. So in that case, I think students should be taught how to admire the picture of Picasso and Monet. And on the issue of this mistrust, It's really very sad, because somehow I feel that if the UEC was conducted in the Spanish language, maybe it's easier for it to be recognized. Or instead of the Jawi script, it is the old Maya script, maybe the Chinese society would not be against it so much.
Victor, thank you so much for your thoughts. And, well, again, you know, more levels and more expressions of just the discomfort about introducing something like this, right? I mean, part of it is, of course, the mistrust, but second part of it definitely coming through strongly is the fact that, actually, why are we learning this in a space where we're trying to be more practical? It's always like, oh, you know, the government is... It might be in conflict and in contrast with what the government is trying to push through, right? On one end, they're saying, okay, you know, get our graduates ready. Learn tech skills, learn coding, learn another language to be more competitive on the job market. But then at the same time, they are seemingly introducing, and I guess to some people, something that doesn't necessarily have an application in today's time.
I mean, the economic value of it or the market value of it obviously is very much not tangible, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have any value at all. So we've been talking about the beauty of it and how it can lead to greater things and appreciation of the things. So because students, some are scientifically inclinated, some are more artistic in nature. So maybe for some or a small portion of students, if learning art or calligraphy in other languages will generate interest to get into arts in the future, then that's a good thing as well.
Well, I don't know if there's a differentiation we can make between art and science and language. They're all the same thing, really. I mean, we have to be activated, all of our minds. But can I ask you, Ayman, because again, you're the only one who can read and write Jawi and presumably do the calligraphy as well. How would you feel if you were the last generation in Malaysia that could do that? What if it is a dying art? I mean, would you be feeling it's lost? Because I wonder if the men in the ministry are thinking that they're of a certain age where they might be actually seeing the transition into its oblivion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the thing about Hutt is, yes, it would be a shame if it disappears, because there is so much story behind it. It's not just about what it looks like, but also where it came from and what it represents, because it comes in many different forms. And it comes from this country and that country and this country and different ages and times. So there is a history behind it as well. And in terms of what happens if it does disappear, then it's like, I don't know, maybe if you lose a Picasso painting, if there are no more Picasso paintings in the world, then...
But that it means that much, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And if it doesn't mean that much in this country, it would definitely mean that much to other countries as well, and other communities in other countries, because it is part of their culture and history.
And up next, we have Louis on the line. Louis, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, good evening. My thought regarding this, I think it, for the Javi, it didn't really bring lots of benefit to the SJKC or whatever primary schools. There are actually many ways, like I'm from SJKC as well. So what I think is the better way, maybe you can introduce an Indian language for us. It'll be better for us to understand more. Yeah, instead of understand the Javi, which they say to promote culture and whatever is introduced in 2014, which they actually can just change it if they want to, and can promote any other that they feel like more... They can learn more in their primary school for the other students. Yeah, yeah.
Louis... So sorry, Louis, thank you so much for the call. And that is...
That's a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point, right? Besides that, right, in... I guess the other part of it is, what other ways could we have introduced this without it being part of the syllabus so formally like this? Could it just be a visit to the Islamic Arts Museum, for example?
Maybe. Yeah.
Or, you know, just making it part of a class activity that teachers can explore.
Absolutely, again.
And the fact that it only concentrates on one language obviously would have generated a lot of criticism, and I don't know why they don't do it for all the languages, because it's such a beautiful thing to have.
And I only read one script. I can only read the Roman script in my life. But it would be good to know, for instance, the alphabet or the syllabary or whatever it is, I'm not even sure, of the Tamil language, rudiments of Chinese writing. You know, it would be a beautiful thing to know all those things.
And two messages that I guess stood out for me is one here from Saiful Azmi that reads, Jawi for me is a Malay culture and not a Malaysian culture. Forcing Jawi to other races other than Malays makes not much sense, since they can't appreciate nor relate to the culture. Hence the unfavorable response, especially from the Chinese. Though I guess that is one part of the anxieties that's being expressed, right, that you cannot relate to it. Though I'm of the opinion that there is value in this, you know, as a Malaysian citizen, that we do learn and appreciate how different cultures express themselves one way through language. And it is such an interesting thing, right? Like, the people I know right now that are studying Jawi and that are pursuing it in more in-depth ways are not Malays, you know. I mean, maybe they're probably a lot. It just says something about my social network. But it is quite interesting that it does, in fact, connect other races, especially, it's just a Malaysian thing. I don't think it's race specific in that case.
And I think they could have mitigated the anxieties if they introduced it for all the languages. Like they do calligraphy for Chinese, Indian, and Malay.
That'd be cool.
You can keep your thoughts coming. 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading to the 7 p.m. news in the meantime. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.